José Balmaceda, part two.
Okay, this one has part religion as well. Yes, it does. Exactly.
It's on?
That's on.
Yeah, okay.
So, the first question is, you know, here, what types of music did you grow up hearing, and who are your favorite singers, and what were your favorite songs, and you know that if you want to sing, you can write, go ahead.
Well, as it is already known, as I said, my first education, my first introduction to education was what I remembered afterwards it wasn't really kindergarten, it was just like a sort of a preparation thing. I was maybe 5 years old. And we went to a school. My first school was at St. Anthony. St. Anthony, which was also a Jamaican teacher. I can't remember his name, but this was on 14th Street and Amador Guerrero. And this the second year, my education was at Connor School. And it is well known then that I was brought up in English. We spoke English at home, despite the fact that my father never spoke English. My mother was something like the interpreter, you know. And we would understand when they were talking to us, you know, like correcting us in Spanish. But concerning the music, I don't think, remember if I told you about my exposure to good music. At Connor School, he had one time Paul Robeson that came in from the United States, a black bass singer, and I was impressed with that. I will always remember that. And then, of course, at home, we listened to radio, and I loved to hear Frank Sinatra. I loved to hear the American singers, you know. And I thought of it also with singing and my introduction, so to speak, to religion. Because at Connor School, I don't remember who had us involved with singing religious songs, but it was all in English, you know. And but my parents were Catholic, so being English speaking, we went, my four brothers and myself, we went to an English Catholic church in Cologne, which is still there, St. Joseph. And right now I sing for the Catholic choir, the bishop's choir in Panama, and I tell people that I made my first communion in English. They don't believe me. They don't believe me. I said, yeah, yo hice la primera comunión en inglés. And that was, I was 8 years old, 1941. Somewhere in my, in my album, I have a picture of my brother and myself, you know, all dressed in white. We had to wear a white suit, you know, to do our first communion and the candle and so forth. So that was my introduction to religion. The songs that I sang, many songs were in English from Connor School, I remember, but my first communion was at, of course, in those days, the Catholic Church, the Mass was in Latin. So it was so different. It was so different in those days. And then, I just went along with that singing. And I started to sing in Spanish when I went to Abel Bravo, because I loved Benny More. Benny More was one of my favorites from Cuba, and I would be singing along in the classroom and so forth, until one friend told me one day, hey, you like to sing, do you want to sing with our trio? And I said, okay, we're going to give serenades. I never knew what that was before, because I was brought up with the West Indian culture. So that's when I started to get introduced to Latin American culture, so to speak, Latin American customs with the music and so forth. So I went out and I sang a serenade with my friends. And that went on for 2 years until they had a contract. There were five of them. They got a contract in the Hotel Washington to sing from table to table. It was boleros, you know, and pasillos, and Latin music. And then we graduated, and my first job, I met with them to have a couple of drinks, you know, to celebrate my first check and so forth. And at 5 o'clock they said, hey, we're going to play at the Washington Hotel. Why don't you come along and sing with us? I said, okay. So I went home, took a bath, changed my shirt. They were wearing this panacilla, camisilla type Panamanian thing. It's more Cuban, you know, the type of shirt. And there were five of them and I made six. It looked kind of clumsy, you know, six of us walking in between the tables and singing and so forth. And guitars, I don't play the guitar, I was just a singer. But there was this one guy that I had known for years. He sings or sang, I don't know where he is now. I'm talking about 1957 or 58, you know, many years ago. His name was Ruben Goodsir, and he was a tenor. He sang beautiful. Then all of a sudden he said, ladies and gentlemen, I would like to present you to Mr. Jose Balmaceda, who is my substitute. I said, what? Nobody knew what was going on. And after we finished our rounds, we went outside, what was that all about? You know, and he said, well, you know, in our singing and so forth, this Italian lady fell in love with this fellow's voice. And she told him that she was going to get him or pay him his studies in music in the Scala di Milan in Italy. So I was supposed to be the substitute. So they said, are you going to continue with us? I said, all right. I liked it, you know. It felt good, you know. People applauding you and so forth and so forth. And he did leave. That was his last day singing with us. But eventually we found out that his scholarship was in the United States. He decided to go to the United States. I guess the lady paid his fare and his studies over there. And he graduated years after we knew as a professor in chemistry. That was his thing. I don't know if he continued singing, but I continued singing for him, you know. And then we continued playing, and since I worked with the Instituto de Vivienda Urbanismo, which is the housing division from the Panamanian government then, it was 1955. The law, the Ramon Eisenhower Treaty, where New Cristobal in Colón, where the Americans lived, white Americans. Remember, the Gringos had a lot of, the Americans had separation. The Caucasians would be living in Colón and New Cristobal, and black people would be living in a canal zone area that it was called a rainbow city then. Today it's called Arcoiris. You know. And then with the Ramon Eisenhower Treaty, that area was turned back to Panama, and people with money, most of them, would come in to purchase the houses in New Cristobal area. You know, and then I would tell them, hey, if you're going to inaugurate or have a party, you know, for your house, whenever it's ready, I have a group that we can play for you. And we played in about 50 houses. You know, everybody would come in and the word spread, you know, hey, Balmaceda has a group. And then we started to play for them, and we got contracts. Some of them were they had their businesses, you know. We had a lot of contracts in Cologne for the well-to-do people. And especially our name was Los Inseparables, the Inseparables, okay? But then one of them came over, the guy that got me into the group, he came over to Panama. He was married, looking for a better job and so forth. And we had a lot of contracts with the Cuerpo Consular in Colón. Until one day one consul said, hey, ustedes son tan consul, you that are as consuls as us, because you're in all our parties, you know, and I like the idea, you know, you are consules de la música. And I decided, I told him, hey, why don't we change your name to Los Consules, you know, and it remained for over 45 years. That's our name today, Los Consules. Well, I got the job on a canal zone with the army, working as a draftsman, and just about the second year, I think, the first or second year that I was working over there in Fort Davis, my sister, she was having a party for one of her co-workers, and who years before was our neighbor, Mr. Quarles. And he was turning 75 years old. My sister asked me, can you bring your friends and just play for us, just the three of you? And I said, okay. So we went over there, we sang, and a guy, it was in Fort Davis Community Club. That's why most of the time when they tell me, what kind of singer are you? I say, I'm a community singer, you know. I sing for the community. And this guy, he heard us, and he came over and asked us if we were Puerto Ricans. I said, no, we're from Colón. Oh, you guys make me, you remind me so much of Puerto Rico because of your singing and your songs and so forth. How would you like to play here at the community club on Sundays at the brunch? All right, that sounds good. How much you charge? We gave him a price, and we started at Fort Davis. And that's where we continued with our boleros and so forth, going from table to table at the brunches. And I think we sang in every army club, whether community club, whether NCO club, whether especially officers club. And we did a lot of singing over there in the canal, on the posts, army posts, for almost 20 years. As a matter of fact, we closed out. We closed out the Fort Amador Officers Club before it was turned over to Panama. We were there for the last 5 years. I remember well, there was an American manager, not military. They brought a civilian to manage the club in the last year. A very young fellow. He was in his 30s, 34, 35 maybe. And he was so pleased with the trio, you know, we were four then. The trio, three voices, and a bass player. And I think you know most of them are, the rest of them, they're West Indian descent. One is Claudio Alain Boni. His real name is Claude. But for some reason, the Panamanian government, they don't like to hear English names, you know. Years ago, I think I told the story already, Arnulfo Arias wanted people with English names to change it over to Spanish. But his real name is Claude Alin, Claudio Alin, today. The other fellow who has been with us now for 50 years is Alfredo Joseph. So you can hear the English names, you know. And the bass player who has been with us now, he's the youngest. He's only about 50-something. We are all up in the 70s. His name is Marcos Wattler. And if I'm not mistaken, I had recommended that you interview him in Colón. Marcos Wattler. He's a teacher in music. Well, anyways, we did a lot of singing on it. And I remember this fellow, he was white with blue eyes, you know. And he said, hey, Balmaceda. I'm going to give you $50 more, so forth, you know, and we just kept going up and up and up, because people, it was full house every Sunday, full house, and people forming lines outside for the turn to go in. And then one day, he asked me, I asked him, you know, you want me to sing something in English? And he said, because I know a few songs, you know, from the old days that I learned. And he said, have you ever heard anybody singing Serenade in English? I said, no, you keep your Spanish. I want my people to know that they're in Panama, this is a Latin country, and this is your style, okay? Boleros, romantic, and so forth. Well, that's just a small story on what we were doing over there in the canal area. But otherwise, with the singing now, I have a lot of respect. I have a lot of love, and I mean it, to a gentleman who is 93 years old now, and I hope to have you interview him and have his story shortly. Mr. Henry Augustus Trim, the music teacher that I met some 55 years ago, because my first job was as a teacher, as a math teacher, although I didn't have a degree. You know, I could handle math, and then at this Catholic school in Cologne, they offered me the job. That was my first job as a math teacher. It was high school stuff, you know. So, Mr. Trim was a music teacher there. He played and plays. Still is on the piano. And the nun... She was the director of the school. She knew I sang, and she noticed that I was very popular. You see, with the kids, you know, it was all a girls' school, and the girls would come around and come around and come around, and she would be chasing them away, you know, and so forth. But then, all she said, "Okay, we need to do a program in the Rex Theater, which was right next to the school. We're going to have a program with the kids, you know, but we want Mr. Balmaceda to finish up the program singing in four languages." I said, "What?" So she had Mr. Trim practice for me to sit with me, for me to sing in English, in Spanish, in French. Is that you're Francais, you know. Vous savez français, tiene que cantar en francés. Okay, I remember the song. It said, c'est magnifique. La vie est là, que vous prenez par les bras, et la la la, c'est magnifique. I had a lot of fun. English, Spanish, French, and in Italian. In Italian, because in those days, a very popular Italian song was in on the radio. We didn't have television then. It's still sung. As a matter of fact, it was translated into different languages. It's called Volare. Volare, oh, cantare, oh. So that was a big thing for me, you know, in musical world and so forth. And as a matter of fact, she had these kids dancing around me. That I remember Gustrim told me that, "Hey, Bama, I think this nun, before she went into the, what do you call that? As a nun, she worked on Broadway or something." Because she was good. She was good getting these kids together and putting them in choreography, you know, lifting the legs and swinging around and so forth. We had a lot of fun. We had a lot of fun. So that's where I started to get into Gustrin's world, and I should say, on the contrary, where he got into my world, because he taught me. He played at different churches in Cologne, and he taught me to sing the Ave Maria from Schubert, and the Ave Maria de Gounod, and a couple more different Ave Marias for weddings, and I guess I would have had 3 or 4 weddings every year with him, you know, and make some extra money. And that was fun also, you know. I made money off music. It wasn't a fortune, it was money, but then I had more fun out of it, you know, doing these things. So over the years, and he taught me another, a couple other songs for Mass. And then over the years, I just got more involved with the trio. And Mr. Trim, he retired as a teacher. He was a teacher in Cologne. But he continued giving piano lessons, you know, and so forth. Then I moved over to Panama City. And I did get a couple contracts over here to sing Ave Maria. Aside from the trio, you know, that we were playing on the Canal Zone, I get to know people and I tell them, hey, they contracted me for, with the trio the other night, they contracted our group to play at the ceremony, and I said, if you want an Ave Maria for your Mass, you know, your Catholics, say, oh, sure. So we kind of put things together, and we had some good contracts. Then in 1999, well, I'm skipping something. When I went to the university in 1956, the University of Panama, I came over from Panama, from Cologne to Panama every day. I had to commute. Then that year they organized for the first time a choir in the University of Panama. And they asked me if I wanted to belong to it. I said yes, and then I got into that. I sang with them for about 3 years. And if you know me well enough, I had to be president. So I got to be president and got the opportunity to go and sing in Colombia, in Bogota. And I had four solos. I was a baritone soloist. And we went over to Teatro Colón in Bogota. And we had standing ovation. I mean, these are things that have really marked, you know, a spot in my life, especially as a singer. That's why I speak more about being a singer than being a draftsman or an engineer, tech or whatever. I had the solo at the end of the program, along with the professor. Because the other lead tenor that was supposed to sing with me, he got sick. Professor, he was a coward, you know. And the professor said, okay, if he's going to be sick, I'm going to do the singing with you, Baba. Said, are you all right? Say, yeah, I'm all right. So we sang together, the choir came in. It was a beautiful song, you know, in Spanish. And we had that curtain go up and down seven times in Teatro Colón of Bogota is something that you can always talk about. I mean, it was good. We had the Panamanian consul there, embajador, it was Ritter Aislan, and he came up and he brought us in those days the professor would have us sipping a cognac. He brought a case of cognac. So it wasn't any sipping anymore. We drank it down. We were so happy for it, you know. That was my first experience outside. My first and only experience singing outside of Panama. And it was good. It's one of the better parts of my life as a singer. After 40 years, that was in 1997. The professor, who was Chilean, he was celebrating 60 years of marriage. So all these old timers like myself, you know, they called me, hey, let's go visit the professor. He invited us to his party, 60 years married. So we went down there and we started to hum, you know, boy, boy. Hey, we still have something. Hey, Bama, you continued in the music. But we're still there, you know, and so forth. So we got together, practiced, and his son was the director of the group now. And all his sons are musicians, professor in music. And we made in 1997 a few presentations locally, as I said, community singing. You know, we sang at the University of Panama. We had a concert, a full house concert. I have a video on that. It was taped for a local television station, and I have a tape at home on that. So after we did singing, and they invited us to go sing a mass for Holy Thursday in 1998, then they invited us again in 1999. They asked for me to sing one of the songs and at the mass, Holy Thursday, the soloist. I felt honored. Then for some reason in the year 2000, probably with the start of the century, the Catholic Church here in Panama, they decided to organize your first, or rather organize in a more organized manner. I mean, it's redundancy, but the choir, the bishop's choir, because there is a mass that we celebrate every year. It's called Cita Eucharistica. There are about 17,000 people go to this mass. Eucharist, I think you say in English, okay. Holy Eucharist Mass yearly. And they have it at the gym, the Gimnasio Nuevo Panamá. And in the previous years, they were just calling kids from all over the different parishes. They practiced for a couple of weeks and they sing. But now they wanted to make it more serious, more organized. And my wife is a singer in the church. And she came at our parish. And then she came home one day and she says, Jose, they want us to go sing for the choir, the bishop, the new bishop's choir. I said, me? Yeah. Okay. So since the year 2000, I've been singing with the choir. And why I am mentioning this as one of the highlights of my life is because 75%, 80% maybe, or kids. When I say kids, I'm 75. And we have children between the ages of 17 to maybe 35, 36. That's about 75, 80% of the choir. And I know there is a lot of space between people of my age and people of their age, and they've showed from the first day. They showed appreciation. Of course, I am a very very fatherly person. Also, I'm a very fatherly person. As a matter of fact, I think you know that I have 8 children, and then I got to. I can't teach music because I've been singing for 50 years and I make a lot of mistakes still. Maybe it's just a blend in the voice that people know. I make a lot of mistakes, you know. I lose my rhythm. You know, I can't... I still, after all these years, I just can't memorize a song very well and so forth. But maybe it's the blend in the voice. But the kids, they invite me to sing my boleros at their parish programs to, you know, for raising funds. The first time I remember, and most of these kids are from poor vicinities. None of them. I can't think of any that can say, hey, this guy is a well-to-do family, you know. And then most of them are from San Miguelito. With that, I can tell you everything. San Miguelito is one of the not so poor anymore. But that's where they started building the first houses for poor people some 50 years ago. But Pacora, this is why I admire these kids. Pacora is about 1 hour from Panama Center, maybe more. Pacora is after you pass Tocumen and you keep going towards Darien. Not that far, of course. And these kids come from Pacora, there are 3 of them. And they will come from Pacora to come and sing in the choir. I mean, That's love in Jesus. That's love for your church. That's love for you. And they invited me three, four years ago, you know, said, Mr. Balmaceda, one of them told me, my mother saw you singing boleros on the television. You know, and she belongs to the church committee that's organizing a Mother's Day program. We're going to be charging $1 at the door, you know, but this is all for funding the church activities, and we don't have the money to pay you. I said, that's all right. You know, that's all right. I'll do it. I'm not rich, but I'm not that poor either, you know. I can afford it. So I got a friend of mine. We went up to Pacora, and it was a night program. I don't drive by night anymore for a few years now. So I got this friend that plays the piano. We went in his car. He has a little bus. And we went up there. I always remember that night because there were 13 candidates. They had a Mother's Day program. But they weren't mothers. They were our grandmothers or great-grands, you know. Because the youngest was about 85 years old. And I had already sang for the choir a couple of solos. You know, we have televised mass sometimes. So I guess that's where my popularity came from. People see me on television singing and so forth with the choir. I had several solos, and it was made visible at that program because when they said, and now singing boleros to our mothers, there were 13 candidates, as I said, the youngest was about 85 years old. We will have Mr. Jose Balmaceda. I was surprised, you know, because most of the people up there were the grandchildren of these ladies. And when they clapped me up, you know, so I sang a song for mother and so forth, and that's where it all started. I've been up there four times already. last January I went up there, and they gave me a certificate naming me honorario, you know, hijo meritorio de Pacora. Well, I mean, not for $1 million anybody can have something as good as that. You know, people, that's love, that's love. This is why I like to share my music, I share my love. And when I get some of it back, I don't get some of it, I get everything back and plus on it, you know, I put a plus on it. Makes me feel good. Makes me feel important. So I have been going now to, I've gone to about 6 or 7 different parishes singing my boleros, you know. They invite me to go sing, and I said, you know, I always say, okay, you know. And most of the time in San Miguelito area. There is one area that they say, it's very dangerous, Samaria, you know, in Panama, and it's San Miguelito. And I tell people, I've already gone up to Samaria 3 times. They say it's even more dangerous than Colón. You know, and I said, I don't know. I drive out on a certain street, and they come out, and they go in with me, you know. They take care of me. When I go up there, and I sing my boleros, and I have the kids. As a matter of fact, even one time, one of these kids came up to me and asked me if I could dance with her. She's about 17. They danced. You say, yeah, all right. So, that's my crowd now. I have a fan club up here, they say. Well, music. That has been my life. That has been my communication with people. Music has been my communication with Jesus Christ. Music has been communication with my family, my friends, and I have been celebrating my birthday for the last 20 years with my friends with music. So I guess I have a good musical life. I've had a good life.
Can I get you to sing part of or recite for me some of your favorite lyrics? I know you sang a little bit of a song before. Could I get you to sing another one of your songs?
You mean aside from Nature Boy?
Hey, you have to do like a small little sample.
You know that Nature Boy. As I said, it has been my better means of communicating with people. Whenever we had our meetings, I already told a story before about the colonels, you know, and the canal zone area. One day I went to a colonel and I told him, hey colonel, I'd like to take 2 hours annual leave. Because on 8th of December, Panama celebrates Mother's Day. And he says, and I would like to go to the different buildings, the divisions, and sing songs to the Panamanian mothers and even American mothers, whatever, it's Mother's Day, you know, and I would like to honor the mothers in our organization, in our division, engineering division it was. And he said, sure, go ahead, Bouncer. So I took my 2 hours annual leave. I was making something like $15 then, an hour. No, maybe less. Because this started many years. I was in my $11, $12. I was a grade 7 then. And I went to the different areas and sang my Mother's Day song, one song, you know, in each stop. I did that for a couple of hours. And my friends came over from Cologne. They came over in a train. Those days the train was 75 cents. So they came over, got off at Curacao. I picked them up and we sang our song. The following year, I already told before this story. You know, I told the colonel, hey colonel, I want to do the same thing like last year. He said, Bama said, what annual leave? Go ahead and do it. It's not part of your job. You know, and I did that for about 6-7 years on government time because afterwards, the colonels, not only my colonel from different areas, would call me to be on different benefit programs or whatever. Especially in the month of October, which is Hispanic Heritage Month that they celebrate. You know, I would be on all sorts of committee. And this is why I made a resume, a summary of when I graduated. When I retired, these ladies got together and gave me a super program at one of the higher class places here in Panama at $30 a head. I told her, no, you can't do that. Some people are telling me that they can't make it. Said, you deserve it, Bama. I said, I know, but what about the people that want to go, you know? And however, 115 people turned up. And not only the 115, but there's a lady, an American lady, that she was the XO for the commander-in-chief of the army in the canal area. She showed up, and as she said, I have a video on it. She showed up as my friend, and in representation of the commander, to give me a letter of appreciation for doing more than the call of duty through my music. I mean, I felt good, you know. To these people, to these army people, getting people together with music was more than the call of duty. And of course, I was a good engineer tech also. Right. So, you want a song? And especially when we would have our Christmas parties and so forth, there was a lady, an American lady, white, and she'd always say, hey, Bama, I want you to sing Nature Boy for me. This is why I always sing that. That's a beautiful song that Nat King Cole. You can get it on YouTube. Probably I will put it on YouTube one of these days. Who knows? But here it goes. Nat King Cole, I think he was an odd, no. An otter. Who wrote it, I don't know. But it goes this way, and I sang it to the kids at the school. There was a boy, a strange, enchanted little boy. They say he wandered very far, very far, over land and sea. A little child, yet sad of eye, but very wise was he. And then one day, a magic day, he passed my way. And while we spoke of many things, fools and kings, this he said to me: the greatest thing you'll ever learn is just to love and be loved in return. Now that's a beautiful song. And since we're talking about West Indian traditions and so forth, I must say that in my time, when I was a kid, I heard a lot of calypsos. I mean, some of the best calypso singers in Panama came from Colón. You know, and we enjoyed it, but mostly dancing. For some reason, you know, the swing, you know, the drums and so forth. And as people say, Colón people from my time at least, you know, we were all dancers. We would get involved. Now that we mentioned that, and I think I said it before, we talk about white people and black people, okay, in Colón, because that was it. You're black, you're white, whatever. That kind of discrimination, but all right. But the white people, the rich people, mostly, because white people also, without money, couldn't go to the strangers' club, you know. That was the location, straight, and we sang there 100 times. We were a favorite group playing for these people, and they paid well. But there was a place in 14th Street, and that was Melendez Avenue, G Street. I also mentioned that the Americans had given letters to the streets, D Street, G Street, and so forth. But Panama, when Panama changed it all to Spanish, all right? Avenida Melendez and 14th, 15th Street, Tropical. We had a lot of parties down there. That's where black people went down. We had fights, we had dances, we had presentations of singers, whatever. You know, that was our social encounter place. At the Club Tropical. That was it. But the calypso, I learned a few, but I never made it a popular thing. And the trio occasionally will sing a calypso. But then my friend Bonnie, he is more calypsonian than I am. All right, if you want, I can even sing a calypso. So we have like 3-4 calypsos in one. Hold him, Joe. Hold him, Joe. Hold him, Joe, and don't let him go. Hold him, Joe. Hold him, Joe. Hold him, Joe, and don't let him go. Me donkey one water. Hold him, Joe. That was brought in from the islands, and then there were others that we knew better because of Harry Belafonte, you know. Deo, deo, daylight come and me want go home. Those are songs that we heard first with Harry Belafonte. And then there are other songs that were written by Panamanians, and I expect to get some testimonies from Mr. Buckley, who can talk some about that. Mr. Bush, they call him Bush. One of the leading musicians in Panama for about 30 years. He's already retired. As a matter of fact, he left for Jamaica yesterday. He knows more about it because he did songs with his band, is one that said, "Yeah, that night I met up with a gentleman." I think that was written in Panama. "The other night I met up with a gentleman. We begin an interesting conversation." And they keep talking and say, and they get involved, that song, which is the calypso, get involved with different types of music, you know. Say, and he asked me to sing bolero. You know, and then you sing a bolero. And he asked me to sing whatever, you sing something else. That's the type of music that we enjoyed in dancing in Colombia and in Panama. Because there was an orchestra, a very popular orchestra that played in Panama. They were popular throughout Central America and Colombia, Armando Bossa. They did a lot of singing calypso. And I would believe, if I can remember where, I have a picture of them somewhere home. And most of them were also West Indian descent, you know. And they hit the calypso with the real thing, you know. It sounded calypso. It's not like, what kind of example can you give you? Like, but he did it pretty good, like Nat King Cole singing in Spanish, you know. Aquellos ojos verdes, da 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 da. He made an effort. I mean, it went right around the world. Everybody bought it. But these people that sang calypso with Armando Bossa, it was a real calypso. And I think the mighty Sparrow came to Panama, and Lord Panama, and these guys are dead. Some of them are dead, you know. Many of them sang with these orchestras in Panama. But calypso has been a very popular music in Colombia. And in Panama, and I don't know too much about Panama City, maybe some of it now, but in Colombia, we had that kind of music for parties. And then I remember a carnival. You know, carnival means music. There was a group of West Indian descendants, since we were talking about them. For carnival, there was a group called the Yaquiban. I don't know if you ever heard about them. They would form a line, there were about 100 of them. And they would be marching down in twos. So they would make a 25 row of twos, you know. And they would just very good, with that, and singing calypso, and just walking down the street. All of a sudden, they turn right, they turn left, they turn left, they turn right. And you know, the kids would be just running behind them. But these were all young people. They were in there, maybe 18, 20, 22 years old. May have a couple of older people like me, you know, not that old. But they were very popular in the carnival days in Colombia, the Yaquiban. And that is something that I don't remember anybody having written or even commenting on that. You know, the Yankee band from Colombia. They were very popular. And they carried that music along with them, you know. They carried that music. Well, I guess that's it on my music.
Well, what about, what music do you listen to now? What are your favorite songs now? And what do you like about them? Is it different from in the past? Or is it the same? Has it changed?
Well, I haven't changed. My bolero is still the very most popular music that I like to listen to. And once in a while I will listen to, like say, Kleiderman on the piano and so forth. And of course, I have to, because that's what I do nowadays, Catholic music, you know, Christian music. So it's, I do it every day. Every day I listen to music, I listen to my boleros, I listen to my Christian songs, but not every day I don't listen to instrumental. You know, just when I want to relax, really relax, and just sit back and put on. I have a couple of records home, like Kleiderman, like Liberace. You know, they're from the old days.
Do you like to eat? What are your favorite foods?
I like to eat, but I eat to live. I don't live to eat. Let's put it that way. But I must say that when I was a kid, I was brought up on West Indian cooking. You know, the kukusan, that kind of cooking. I had already mentioned this lady because she was something very important in our family. Miss Ruth. She wasn't our maid. It was just that my mother, they were neighbors. We talk about neighbors. I lived on this tenement building and so forth. There were about 10 families. And everybody would be assisting each other. And we have good memories of these people. And this lady would come in and cook for us, Miss Ruth. She would take care of us because my mother, my father had put up a fruit store. It was a fruit stand on the sidewalk. Then he rented a room and he had his locksmith on the half side with a long sausage type room. On one side he had his locksmith and on the other side he had fruits. And my mother would take care of the fruit side. And this lady, Miss Ruth, she would come in and she would cook for us. I remember the porridge and I remember the tea and, you know, and people talk. A good example, people would talk about aloe vera, aloe vera, aloe vera. I said, what is that? And that is also so. When I was a kid, Miss Ruth and Miss Daisy, they would push, I don't know, down our throats, whatever, that was it. Aloes. Everybody had an aloes plant outside their door, you know. And the bush tea, I all remember that. Every Saturday they would purchase, you know. Unfortunately, I was going to say, maybe that's why I lived on the 75. Unfortunately, I can't say the same for my mother. She died at the age of 49. And my father was at the age of 60. But, I remember that. That's the kind of food I ate. So when I came over to Panama, in Colón, then I married a Latin, you know, real Latin, Balmaceda, and her name, Batista family, you know. And she started cooking in a different way. I liked it. You know, the principal thing, the main thing for food to me is the gravy. That's really what gives it the taste that I like. I don't like dry food too much. I like the gravy, especially with the meats and so forth. Eh? And then I got divorced, and over here in Panama, it's a different cooking. And then my wife now, she makes on Sundays, every Sunday, we have spaghetti with chicken, and I love that. If I don't have that any Sunday, I feel strange, you know. So we've gotten into habits. I don't like to eat too much. I've never been a full plate eater, you know. I just eat enough to make me satisfied. Although 2 hours afterward, I'm hungry again, you know. And then I drink a lot of Coke. Too much, maybe, and cake. That's my weakness. Sweets. That's my terrible weakness. I was operated on in 2003. I have a double bypass. My weight was always 175, and after the operation, I don't know what else they operated on, but I am eating less than what I always ate before. But I put on 22 pounds that the doctor say that I have to take off. I don't know. Because I still ache for sweets. In the morning after breakfast, like for now, you know, when I leave here, I'm going to have some, maybe a donut or something like that. Then I have in the afternoon also, 3, 4, 5 o'clock, I am angered to have a piece of cake or whatever, something sweet. And then at night, while I'm watching the ball game, as a matter of fact, I'm a Yankee fan, baseball. And my basketball team from Los Angeles lost out the other day. That's another thing, I love sports. And that's what I eat now. In sports, I think I spoke about sports. I was a sports writer for about 20 years in Cologne and so forth. I did a lot of that also, but I gave that up years ago. I gave that up years ago because it had been disappointing that my Cologne teams are always losing. And I keep telling people that when they got rid of the good players from way back from Cologne, I remember I would see a 170-pound, so to speak, black person, you know, from Cologne. Cologne was always black, you know. Baseball team, 9 out of 10. What 9 out of 10? 14 out of every 15. And I can name names for you if you want, because I wrote about them. I wrote it. Cologne sport was like Cecilio Williams, you know, Carlos Hyacinth, you know, you had those names in Cologne sports, and they were good. But once you got the gondolas and you got the, I don't know, for some reason, I'm not criticizing, I mean, but these guys, like, they don't have love for their game, you know. They go out and play for themselves. That's what I feel, man. This is just a personal opinion. So Cologne has gone back because most of these players, and you can see the first Panamanian that went up to the major leagues in baseball was from Cologne, Humberto Robinson, you know, and Hector Lopez, the Spanish name, but some people say he was from Bocas del Toro. He insisted he was born in Cologne, but he was Cologne's shortstop, and these guys were good, big fats. Just the name tell you, Big Fats McCollins, you know, when he said, that guy was about 220 pounds. Any pitcher that would face him would be shaken, you know. And I used to go with the Cologne team to the national championship. So I'm telling you that I was there. You know, and I would see these guys, they play. They played great. Graham. We had some very, very good. Phillips. We had some very good players. Well, that's it. I think I already talked about sports, you know.
Yeah.
My involvement with sports. No, I just watched on TV.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you one more thing about food, just in case. Do you cook any of those foods you mentioned?
If I try to boil water, I'm going to burn it. As much as that. No, I make breakfast. I make breakfast. I can fry. I can fry like. Mortadella, how do you say that in English?
Oh, I don't even know.
Okay.
Some ham.
Ham, yeah. I can fry an egg. I can fry an egg, but don't ask me to make rice, or don't ask me to cook. I fry, okay? And I'm not too much of a favorite with the electronic devices. I don't like to fool around, you know, too much. I can make coffee, an electric coffee maker. But no, I am not a good cook.
Okay.
I'm not a good cook. Oh, one thing, and I learned this maybe in a canal zone. I can make scrambled eggs. My wife loves when I make, my daughter, they love when I make scrambled eggs, you know. So it's so easy. The only thing, I chop up whatever I can find in the, you know, I chop it up and tomatoes and so forth, put it in there. I fry that first and I put the egg and so forth. I learned that on the canal, when I worked on the canal zone. The scrambled eggs, you know. Otherwise, no, I'm not a cook. I would promise anybody that I cook for them.
What are your favorite sayings, and where did you first hear them or learn them?
I don't think I have a favorite. I make them up. I don't think I have a favorite saying.
What are some sayings that you have made up?
I don't know. I don't keep a record of it. But you know, I don't know. You know, I can't remember if I... And maybe I can tell you a story on this. One time I was dancing for the first time with a girl here some 20 years ago. I was in the university, we were in the dance. And I always remember that saying. I dance and I dance and we dance and we dance about three different things. And she said, you know something about Marcela? You never repeat the same step. What? Everything you do, you know. My wife now, she doesn't like my dancing because she said I am an exhibitionista, you know. She doesn't like me do that. She said I'm clowning, you know. But when I dance, I just let go, you know. And maybe that's why I don't remember it. I don't like to repeat things. I don't like to be a pattern, you know. I don't think I've ever lived a pattern. I keep changing and keep different, you know. Even with the singing, I told my friends from the beginning, all right, we're going to use uniforms, and we're going to have six or seven different uniforms, you know, and then we will sing our boleros, but okay, let's put a tango in there, you know. We don't sing tango, but once in a while, all right, let's put a calypso, you know, and keep having a break. Okay, maybe that's it. Maybe that's my lifestyle. Maybe I get bored when I have to sit down for 4 hours and watch television. I don't like to go to movies. Not that I don't like, but I prefer watching a program at home on, like, say, on a DVD. I can stop it and go to have a glass of water and come back and continue. But if I have to watch a picture continuously for 1 hour and a half, 1 hour and 45 minutes, I doze off a little. So maybe, I don't know, maybe that's it. I don't remember having a pattern in my life like that. Oye, ¿qué pasó? You know, things like that. They give me five and so forth. I don't know. I don't go for that.
Alright. Okay. I'm going to try one more. Have you ever heard of Louise Bennett?
No.
Have you ever heard of the Mighty Sparrow?
Oh, yes.
Okay. What thoughts, if any, come to mind when you hear about the Mighty Sparrow? Have you ever seen them perform? And if so, what do you remember about those performances? And what words or lyrics do you remember the most from Mighty Sparrow?
I think I said it before, that I was really a great fan of Calypso. But I know he is one of the best, if not the best, and he has a lot of... there is a difference between popularity and what I want to say is that the advertisement, okay? Advertisement is not the word, but I mean, as you, I think you'd understand that people will... Well, it could be advertisement. Many, he's good, huh? I'm not saying, but many singers especially are well known because they have the media, the disc jockeys, you know. You know how many people ask me, I'm not saying I'm a great singer, you know. How come you don't have a CD? You know, I say, the Consules, my trio, we burnt a 45 about 40 years ago, and in those days I was very popular as a sports writer, and I had all my writer friends, people from the media, they were all friends, and we put on a show for them and presented the 45, and we sold six. And that's about this, because I think I bought two for my kids, you know, whatever. That's a little exaggerated, but you need the popularity is mostly, I use the word advertisement, help me.
PR.
Alright, public PR. Relations. Mm-hmm. Public relations. Yeah. We have never been able to sell ourselves. That's what I'm saying now. Sparrow, he, you know, like Harry Belafonte. Harry Belafonte, to me, is the best. to me is the best because of his style. Because I don't remember not even one of the lyrics from Sparrow, and I sang a couple from Belafonte just now. Because his poise, you know, his style is demanding respect. I would like to say this, but don't print it.
Okay, yeah, without the recording. Yeah.